Today's special guest, Arch Crawford from Crawford Perspective. Well, my featured guest today, Arch Crawford, uses all types of technical analysis combined with his own proprietary work. Hello, sir.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
How is the weather today in that part of Arizona?
Well, this is a beautiful time of the year here. It's before the summer heat has set in. It's cool in the morning and pleasant in the afternoon. So we're enjoying it tremendously. We have citrus trees in the yard. Our cat chases hummingbirds around the yard.
We have a home up in the mountains, and with skylights in the ceiling, I had to rig up a special telescopic net in order to fishnet to rescue hummingbirds. Their favorite escape mechanism, as you probably know, is a vertical ascent. So they get trapped up in our skylights, and after 15, 20 minutes, you can imagine that type of hovering flight will exhaust all of their energy resources and they collapse from a lack of energy.
Can you then pick them up and take them outside, or are they not easily accessible?
It would be too late by that point. When they exhaust their energy, we found they don't have enough energy to fly again and procure honey or nectar. So at that point, they expire. So what I do is I just take the net, capture them. They're pretty easy to, believe it or not, to capture once they're in a skylight. It's about 20 feet up, and then just release them outside. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times, that seems to do the trick. But they're fascinating creatures. You know, they sit perfectly still, hovering, one of the few creatures in the world that can do that. So on to the markets. You know, we've had a lot of interesting activities, you know, in recent weeks, and I'm sure you've been watching the FOMC announcements, a lot of people waiting for the big rate hike. When will they, etc. It's looking like September, December. Does that seem to line up with your market outlook as well?
I don't trust what the FOMC is doing or say they're going to do. You know, they kept saying that they were going to raise rates when every other country was lowering rates. And I said that I didn't think they would do it in the newsletter. And since then, they've gotten a lot worse fundamental economic information. And they're saying they won't raise rates unless the fundamental economic numbers get better. And they have not gotten better. So we've put it off from the potential of June to the potential of September by most analysts. I have other things happening in September that could interfere with anything and everything, major dislocations in the world generally, and in the United States in particular, yeah, in September.
Elucidate. Give us an idea of some of these things that you see on the horizon, please.
From everything from some of the cycles that I watch being really horrible at that time to Martin Armstrong's pi cycle is occurring at that time. The end of the month of September is the end of the fiscal year for the United States. There are eclipses taking place and other astronomic phenomena that show great difficulty on the Earth. And of course, we get Jade Helm 15 from June 15th to September 15th.
That's quite a fascinating exercise. They're calling it an exercise. Any type of organized military exercise that covers such a large area certainly should, I think, raise hairs and concerns, I think, by the typical American. Don't you agree?
They should wake up and be very aware. The governor of Texas has activated the National Guard to watch them. It's all he said so far.
Sometimes I worry that by having an open mind, you have a tendency to be labeled with very unsavory monikers.
I'm aware.
I thought that you might be. And the sad thing about that is there's such a stigma attached with not having it. And it dawned on me, I'm very pro-military in the terms of militia, meaning state militias, protecting our borders, which is what I thought our military's original purpose was intended to be.
Amen. But I read that book too.
You know, we've had John Perkins on the show for many years. Now, Confessions of an Economic Hitman is a must read. And I'd love to talk about Jade Helm and the implications and what you really think is going on behind the scenes. But I think we better stick with the market. Let's focus now like a laser back on what you see happening here with the financial markets.
Well, for instance, we've just made new highs in the S&P and the Dow Jones for the first time. It's on the lowest volume since December. Lowest volume of this year. It makes a new high. This is unprecedented that they keep making new highs on decreasing volume and momentum. So I think it's being totally rigged, and maybe they'll jam it up until the Jade Helm takes over.
Your forecasts coincide, as you mentioned, with Martin Armstrong's pi model, which is interesting. You know, I've tinkered around with it a bit. I've backed out the equation a couple of times and then applied it to several different markets. There seems to be some cyclicality at work. But what I find interesting is the, the Hebrew Shemata. At first, I just thought, well, is this just more religious hocus pocus? Started to delve into the numbers, and I noticed, now, we go back to 1987. Well, we all remember the 25% haircut the S&P took in the fall of 1987. I mean, I remember it. I was 18 years old at the time. Then, in 1994, hey, interesting coincidence, 7 years later, we had a nice little crisis. Again in 2001. Everyone remembers 9/11 and the way the markets, underperformed.
We had the worst down week since the fall of France in May of 1940, the week after 9/11.
Exactly, yeah. And then let's fast forward another 7 years. 2008. That literally marks the end of the financial system. It's just on life support and has remained on life support, according to the Fed's balance sheet numbers, doubling every 24 months since 2008 without fail, and it appears ready to blast higher again. We fast forward from 2008. Well, coincidence, maybe, but that's 2015, and we're coming up at the end of 2015 in a few months. That cycle right there, which some people claim is a rhythm that is religious in nature, and others say that it's just an important cycle.
It's a lunar cycle that the Israelis are on the lunar cycle, as are the Arabs, but the Arabs have a different end date, and that changes more frequently. But the Jewish state is on the lunar calendar, and it's the 29th day of Elul is the day of the end of the Shemitah, or the beginning of the Shemitah.
And of course, for those who don't know or are unaware, as I understand the Shemitah, as you're pronouncing it, it's almost like a jubilee. It's a time where debts are to be forgiven. Tends to, for some reason, whether it's coincidence or if it's by design, I guess we'll probably never know, seems to be a period of instability in the financial markets. I just find it fascinating that we're finally coming up on this cycle. And that doesn't mean we're going to see something in the fall. You know, a lot of times these events occur 6 months in either direction. The other thing to keep in mind is markets tend to be discounting, aren't they, Arch? You know, they can discount up to 6 months in advance or more.
Well, I have that whole story about the Shemitah and I have a link to Rabbi Kahn's YouTube that has seen over 500,000 views on my website. And I'm talking about other people who are also predicting big things for September. And I have a link to Martin Armstrong's article about it and a link to some other people's articles about it. Also about the blood moons and all of that. A link to the one on Wikipedia and other things, but I am concerned about those time frames. If you remember, you don't remember, in 1987, I predicted the top day because it was a five-body conjunction, the tightest in at least 800 years that I checked, and it was supposed to be the harmonic convergence, but the people who were celebrating the harmonic convergence were a week early before that concentration of planetary energy, and I had predicted 3 weeks ahead of time the top day exactly. That was the high close in the Dow, August 24th, 1987, and I said after that there will be a horrendous crash, and so I made my name in Wall Street, although my market letter had been going 10 years, I really made all the big names all of a sudden rushed to take my newsletter when right after the, or as the market was crashing, or the week or two, a month or two after.
Well, you know, hat tip for that call, but I think now you'd probably agree that just as we're seeing greater strength on the upside, we'll likely see a bigger splash on the downside. And I don't see how anyone could argue against the fact that this is directly correlated with massive leverage. I mean, we're talking in 1987, you were probably hard-pressed to do much better than 2-to-1, 5-to-1, 10-to-1. Today, institutions are regularly employing 50 and 100-to-1 or more. What you can do is use a margin account with an instrument like, let's say, a futures contract. And then if you've already borrowed in a highly leveraged manner to procure the funds that are in that account, you don't even have to be an institution to lever yourself 50 or 100 to 1.
You can buy an option on the future. Don't recommend it for innocent folk.
Exactly. So, you know, and then, you know, when this ship turns around, you know, there are going to be plenty of professionals all vying to become the next Jesse Livermore, the big plunger on the downside. There's going to be vast fortunes made by very few people on the way up, and there will be even larger fortunes made in a very brief period of time on the way down. And I think the key here is that the everyday homme moyen really must protect themselves against the volatility that all of this leverage is going to bring. And that's why we have folks like you on the show.
Well, thank you. One of the things that I do recommend, I almost never recommend options trading for clients, at least certainly not non-professional clients. But I do keep for myself a few put options, a small amount, like $500, $700, $1,000 worth a month, just in case these things occur surprisingly overnight, where the gold could go up hundreds of dollars and the stock market could go down thousands of points.
If you've read Black Swan by Nassim Taleb, Taleb's personal investing strategy, which incidentally he employed briefly for about a year and a half with a hedge fund that was wildly successful, it sounds remarkably similar to what you've outlined here. He believed that you should tie up 90% of your wealth at any given time in 100% cash, which to him was really like short-term T-bonds. I don't really consider that cash. But his idea was it needs to be just as safe as money in the bank or even safer. And then you speculate, as I'm sure you know, with the remaining 10%, taking outliers, either end of the bell curve, if you will, or more not like a bell curve, but more like a leptocurtic model, like Pareto's curve, for instance. So out on either end of the bell curve in the fat tails, as he refers to them, and that's where you get the most bang for your buck with a tiny amount of money. And then if one of these bets pays off, it pays off 1,000 to 1 or 100 to 1, and your other 90% is just sitting there safe.
Well, in 2008, I put $2,500 into these very fairly short-term and out-of-the-money puts and took out $500,000 on November the 20th, which would have been my mother's 100th birthday. So I think she had something to do with it from the others.
What I wanted to get to here was you're talking about, you know, out of the money calls and puts, if you will. And of course, these are remarkably inexpensive. I mean, you might pay, let's say, 10 cents for a put. 10 cents on $100 is $10. So you might pay more on the commission to buy the put than the put itself. But I would say that for most people, wouldn't you liken it to gambling? It would have to be money that's viewed as speculative and not investment grade, right?
It's insurance. How much do you pay for your insurance? You don't get any money back on that. You hope you never have to use it.
But wouldn't you prefer to wait for the trend to change and then start to speculate? Or is it that you like the low premiums due to the fact that the market is going contrary in the contrary direction? Do you follow the Greeks at all? Do you look at the deltas and the alphas and all the rest?
It is thing that you should know about if you're going to do anything with options.
You know, I used to like the idea of a delta neutral strategy, but in reality, there really is no such. You'd have to adjust the account constantly to maintain a delta neutral. You have much more than just systemic risk. You have the problem of market risk, which can shift anywhere from the currency market nowadays to the derivatives market to the real estate market to bonds and stocks and whatnot. And that brings up another idea. I think we've harped on this long enough. I'd like to shift over to the bond market. I've had guests on here lately, Arch, who are convinced this is the bubble. It's the unknown. Only the insiders are talking about it, that there is a 30-year systemic bond market bubble that no one's looking at, no one knows about, maybe only the insiders are aware of. They're doing everything they can to keep it afloat, but it could go down. And when it does, it takes everything with it. Any thoughts there?
A month ago, one of the things, four charts I have on page two of the newsletter is the 30-year bond. And I have it on a monthly chart. It's a very regular ascending movement from lower left to upper right. Then it extended itself a year or so ago and made a somewhat higher channel. Recently, it spiked well above that channel and has pulled back right down to the top of that, the first channel, which means to me it was an extreme spike and it may have put in the top. And I said so in the letter last month or the month before that. I don't remember when exactly I put that out. But I certainly agree that there's grave danger. Now, there's also grave danger of the opposite, in which case the government allows the feds and the banks to go to negative interest rates or do something what they did in Cyprus, where they just took the money, period. I'm afraid of that.
There was an article this morning making the internet blogosphere rounds, alluding to just that thought. Or will the Greeks wake up to a similar Cyprus moment where they go to sleep and they have $500,000 in their savings account and they wake up and it's $250,000? Or, you know, will anything under or over a certain amount suddenly be confiscated? This whole concept of rehypothecation is something where people think they're safe because they don't have a margin account, but the fine print is something that requires a microscope nowadays to decipher. And I've actually listened to lawyers and counselors say that even some of their colleagues can't decipher or make heads or tails. Partners in law firms who have difficulty understanding just what's hidden between the lines.
I believe they make it vague, so then they can have some paid off judge take their side of it in a lawsuit.
I've been studying recently, just out of curiosity, the first true forensic toxicologist in New York City. And his name was Gettner, and he grew up during a time, you know, his family came from the old world. It was a really difficult time, and he worked his way through school and got together with this brilliant prosecutor named Norris. And they decided, we're going to shake the tree. We're going to get all this rottenness and corruption out of the system, and we're going to make toxicology and forensic a true science. And as a result, they standardized everything. They saved people from going to the electric chair, actually had court cases overruled simply by exhuming corpses, studying the contents of their stomachs, the linings of the stomach and things of that nature, finding cyanide, arsenic, and things of this nature. And it's just a heroic thing. And the reason I mention that is that I suspect we need something like that in the financial system. The corruption is so rife that people have to take steps to protect themselves.
In the very short term now, we have a sharp move up in the dollar index against a very steep downtrend. It just broke out on the upside this morning. And inversely, the oil and the gold have broken down. The gold is down $20 today, which is fairly unusual. Every day and then it has a $20 move. very rarely more than that, but 20 is common, maybe, you know, once every month or 2 months, down 20 today while the dollar is up. The new highs in the markets on decreasing volume and momentum, just they don't make any sense unless the whole thing is like rigged.
Well, I think there's a lot going on there, Arch, and I think an aspect of it is contrived. I mean, there are machinations. I mean, certainly, let's say 30 to 50% of that. I've talked to guests in the past who agree that much of the bailout funds have just been directed by the major corporations into repurchasing their shares in treasury stock and things of that nature. But there's also the aspect of money fleeing, I'm sure you'd agree, from the Eurozone due to the Grexit and potential Greek drama we have there. So you see a lot of money fleeing that part of the world, but you also see money, a huge amount of capital flowing from China. They're cash rich, they have too many dollars, and they can reinvest it back in the United States as well as in the Shanghai Exchange, which I'm sure you've seen at least in recent weeks, not last week, but recently blasting to new highs as well. So there's really a lot of irons in the fire, aren't there?
Yes, and one of the big things that have happened this year is all of the major rapid shifts in different markets where the Swiss unhooked the euro and the euro dropped 30% in 15 minutes and closed down 18% on the day. These are huge numbers in terms of the margins required to trade them. And then we had the oil come down and the interest rates and the bonds came down. What was it? In the past 2 weeks, huge moves relative to the amount of margin required because they don't make those kinds of moves. So,
yeah, wouldn't you agree, though, that the 30-year looks like it's approaching a pretty solid accumulation bottom here? Short-term, look, the 1 to 5 year T-bill looks like it wants to fly higher, and I have a feeling probably look for a short-term trade on a bottom in the 30-year bond, don't you think?
Well, it pulled back down and it stopped on the top of its previous trend channel line. So there is support there. If it breaks that, it's going down a lot more. If it holds there, it could have another rise. And if one thing about the Fed is they're loaded up with bonds still, and they may know something we don't in that the bonds are going much higher, which doesn't make sense, but it's happening in Europe where they go into negative interest rates.
I was just going to say, you may have alluded to it. Maybe the Fed does a token rate hike just to, save face, if you will. And then before you know it, we do start to see negative rates across the board just to get competitive. It's one possibility, but I fear that if they do something like that, it's really the final step to hyperinflation. I mean, they're printing so much now. I can't find a time in history where that didn't lead to runaway inflation eventually. And most of my more senior guests point out, yes, but you're forgetting the bond market eats up all that inflation. It absorbs all of it. But how long can that sponge absorb this endless money? Eventually, it has to be wrung of the inflation.
Well, what I'm concerned about in this case is that normally, okay, they break trend lines this way and that way, and give you some warning. And I'm afraid this time it's going to be an overnight situation where the whole thing takes place. Boom, we wake up and our fortunes are gone and we don't have any clue to what happened.
And I think there's some precedent here. This is not just pie-in-the-sky speculation on your part. For instance, as we just alluded to, the Cyprus event, people wake up and anything over a certain amount, goodbye. You didn't have time to thumb through 1,400 pages of documents. That's just one component here. The other component is, of course, the lightning speed of the digital world. And then there's the lack of backing of our global financial system. You could make the case, it's arguable, that it is not a matter of if, it's simply a matter of when.
I'm in 100% agreement with you there. I recommend that people go to my website, www.crawfordperspectives.com, and look at some of the links about things coming up in September. Very briefly, we predicted in the newsletter when the progressed Mars went retrograde in the United States chart in 2006, that I said it will be retrograde for 72 years, and at the end of that period, we'll be like a third world country.
Do you have a timeline? I mean, a more specific timeline for something like this?
Well, I didn't think it would happen this fast. I thought it would have happened in 72 years, and in 8 years, we've almost done it.
While the government statistics show, oh, the lowest unemployment rate in something like 7 or 8 years, inflation completely tame, where is the inflation? We can't find it. Your manservants and your maids do your shopping for you? Because the last time I was at the you know, I mean, yes. The point is, I think you're right. We are nearing third world status, but the collusion and the cover-up is remarkable. The middle class, which used to be the foundation and the backbone of this country, as you know, have been eviscerated. I mean, now that's a cliche. There's a brilliant new documentary that just came out free for Prime members of Amazon.com last night that shows 100,000 people living homeless in Los Angeles. That's 100,000 known people. What you're missing in that statistic are the other 900,000 who are living in their cars and don't show up in the statistics. We're talking about millions of school children actually in our schools living under bridges, living in cardboard boxes, living in temporary shelters and hotel rooms with 5 or 6 of their siblings, cousins, aunts, uncles, and parents going on in this country today. All the while, we're hearing about the economic miracle that we're all enjoying. Yeah, I better get off my podium here. I didn't mean to give some draconian lecture. I know our listeners are going to enjoy all of your commentary today and the, witty repartee. Arch, please tell folks more about the service you provide as well as how folks can reach you.
Okay, we've had Crawford Perspectives newsletter 38 years this coming Sunday. We have kept in one of the best records in written history, which was alluded to by Robert Prechter on an interview in London. They asked him at the end of the interview, well, who's been good in this business? And Prechter said, well, Arch Crawford probably has the best 30-year record. And in if you look at the Holbert rankings and whatnot, much of my 10 calls were not included in his record, including the crash in 87, so that whatever good record I've had with him, and it's not as stellar as if he would have counted a longer period of my time. But the website is CrawfordPerspectives.com. The phone number is 520-577-1158. The email is CrawfordPerspectives@earthlink.net. It's easier to Google my name, Arch Crawford, and then find the website than it is to write in Crawford Perspectives.
You know, the Elliott Way Forecasting Center is just down the road here, not even probably an hour away from our studio office with, the Elliott Wave folks and Mr. Prechter, who if he mentioned that, and I'm sure he did, that's certainly high praise coming from someone who's considered one of the best forecasters in the world. So folks are going to need to get your browsers directed over to Arch's website, please. Arch Crawford, we're going to look forward to having you back on the show.
Thank you so much.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant cave KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.